the only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. And this week's opening quote comes from Albert Camus. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, it's nice to be back, folks. I'm still in LA at the moment. I'm in a motel near the airport. You'll probably hear a little bit of traffic noise. That's just the way it goes. I did hope to bring you an interview with Chief Black Fox on this week's radio show, but I just have not been able to put it together. It's been very difficult. He's been kind of traveling around LA and doing all sorts of stuff, and so have I. I've been all over the place. And he's actually preparing for ceremony this weekend, so very difficult to catch up with him at the moment. He's rather busy, but I will be definitely getting him on the show within the next couple of weeks. I'll be back in Australia next week, and we're going to hook up on Skype and record the interview that way. And we'll get it to you very soon anyway, but I do apologize about that. I did want to bring you that interview this week, but as I said, we'll work on that and get it to you soon. Something else that I mentioned on last week's show was the possibility of me doing a small gathering or some type of an event while I was in LA, and that's not going to happen either, folks. I kind of got ahead of myself with the time factor, and I'm just not going to have time to be able to put anything together on this trip. But I'm going to try to organize something perhaps for February next year, perhaps late February or early March after I speak in Acapulco. I will try to organize something in LA or in the LA region around about the end of February or, as I said, early March, something like that. I mean, I don't really know at the moment, but I figure if I put it out there now, that gives me 3 or 4 months to actually be able to put it together rather than 3 or 4 days. I think I was a little bit overzealous with my idea of putting a talk together in LA on this journey. I actually forgot how quickly it was that I was leaving. I'm actually leaving this Sunday, the day after tomorrow, so there's no way I'm going to be able to put a talk together tomorrow. So that's just the way it goes, folks. It is hard to keep track of time sometimes when you're traveling. I sort of lose track of which day it is and which week it is and which city or town I'm supposed to be in. It all becomes a bit of a blur after a while. But I'll try to organise that for next February. I think that would be a good thing to do as well. And it gives me a little bit more notice, and of course gives you a little bit more notice as well. And I think we'll probably be able to put something a little bit more stable and reliable together if I leave it till then. And again, and as with last week's radio show as well, if you happen to be watching this on YouTube, I do apologise for the fact that there will probably be no real editing that has gone into this show. No real video slideshow. I simply don't have the time at the moment while I'm travelling, and I'm just going to be putting some random graphic display there. Probably landscapes or scenery or God knows something else, but I do apologise for the lack of relevant viewing material with this video clip as well. But getting on with things, looking at the world today, the two main agendas that seem to be on the table mostly regarding government appears to be depopulation and distraction. Distraction, of course, so people won't notice the depopulation agenda that the government is pushing. And the depopulation agenda takes many forms and has many faces, folks, and it's not what people would suspect it to be. And I know a lot of the information I'm going to present in even discussing some of these thoughts may be a little uncomfortable to people, but I think it's something that needs to be discussed anyway. You know, when looking at the future, we've really got to be realistic about things. Too many people, I think, are looking at things through rose-coloured glasses. Too many people, you know, want to see the positive in things and want this reality that they're focused on to unfold and this bright future and this golden age and everything they're talking about, but they're simply not being realistic in looking at what the Earth is doing, what the human race is doing, and what mechanisms we have for survival through the upheavals that are coming. And there are some upheavals coming, ladies and gentlemen. I've been looking into this more and more, and we are most definitely heading for a grand solar minimum, which is going to change things dramatically for everybody on this earth, and not in any way that is being presented or predicted by government at all. The government is actually predicting the opposite or promoting the very opposite. The government is promoting the concept that we are heading for a period of extreme warmth. When we are not, we are actually heading for a period of extreme cold. And because of the way the government is promoting this as a warm period that is approaching and encouraging people to carry out certain activities, what they are doing is setting them up for depopulation. They're setting them up and putting them into a position where they're simply not going to be able to survive what is coming. And this is a vast majority of people, folks, are being led into this reality unbeknownst to themselves. And as I said, this may be a very uncomfortable thing for many people to hear, may be an uncomfortable thing for people to talk about, but it's just a reality, and so it's something that needs to be discussed. And no, I'm not fear-mongering with this. I'm simply attempting to help people become prepared and to prepare themselves and to take the necessary steps that will be needed to survive what is coming. Because if they don't, if they continue to look at the world through rose-coloured glasses and think that everything's just going to be great, if we just keep our energy and vibration high, the whole world's going to change into paradise, well, I think they're in for a rude shock, and I think that they're going to be glad of getting this type of information now, because this provides a window of opportunity for them to gather some survival skills so that they will actually be able to survive what is coming. And in order to really see this, folks, you've really got to be prepared to step back and look at the bigger picture and really look at the world for what it is. Remove all confirmation bias, remove all belief systems, remove all stake in the outcome of anything that you may think is happening, and just step back and look at it. Put it on the world stage and just look at every single aspect of what's going on and see how it all fits together. You know, when you look at the world, you look at the state of the countries, the wars, the constant strife that we're in, like wars. Wars have been fought since I was a kid. Like, you know, I'm 62 years old and I do not remember at any time on this earth at all where there were not wars being fought. We're always at war with someone. There's always some particular rogue government that needs to be overthrown. There's always some people suffering somewhere. There's always starvation. There's always these financial crises and economic crises and housing crisis and social crisis and all the things that they throw at us. All stuff to keep us worried, keep us looking here and looking there and never really looking around us. Never really looking at what we are in relation to the earth, what it means to be human. We're all sent to these indoctrination camps that are disguised as schools and educated in what to think, not how to think, but what to think. And from that point, as life progresses, things generally get harder and harder and more difficult for people as they go along, you know. And by the time people are middle-aged, they're just sort of running around, keeping their heads down, keeping between the lines and hurrying off to work and doing what they're told and doing everything they can to keep their head above water. Don't disturb me. Don't tell me what's going on around me. Don't tell me what the politicians are doing. I don't want to hear about the corruption. I've got this little thing that works for me. I can get through my life this way. Just leave me alone so I can have my television at the end of the day and my coffee in the morning and I'm good. That's the mentality that people are programmed into, and they just keep their heads down and they don't want to look at what's going on around them. They're all distracted. It's all scary. It's all this stuff. Wars, theater, political theater, criminals, terrorists, car bombings, whatever. Just don't go outside. Stay home. Do what you're told. Keep your head down. You'll be good. That's the mentality, folks. And it's a program. It's a program to stop people from ever really noticing what the world is and what is going on here. And no matter how much we attempt to change things and make the world better, nothing ever changes. The wars continue, the financial strife continues, the economic crisis continues, the social crisis continues, it all continues, nothing ever changes. When we do try to attempt to make some change, all we end up with is political theater. Stuff like we see now. You know, political scandals, impeachments, the left and the right arguing back and forth against each other. But look at the left and the right. Who is the left and the right? Who are all these politicians? I mean, we may think that they are simply people who are elected of the people, for the people, by the people, all that sort of stuff that we're told. But really, when you look at them, folks, how come they're all billionaires and millionaires? Every politician on earth is a millionaire or a billionaire. No normal people actually get to be normal politicians and get to be put into a position of power anywhere. They're all part of the millionaires club, and they all support the same agenda. And of course they do, because they're millionaires. And think about it, folks. I mean, these are millionaires and billionaires. Why do you think we should trust these people? How do you think they got to be millionaires and billionaires? They got it by exploiting the rest of mankind. They got it by exploiting the human race and profiteering from people and just selling people useless stuff that they don't need. They got it by forcing people to pay to be alive and finding ways of funneling all that money to them. And sure, folks, look, I'm not saying all millionaires are bad people, but millionaires who want to be politicians, millionaires who have that sort of a craving for power. I mean, think about it, folks. If you're a millionaire or a billionaire, why on earth would you want to be in a position where you're running a country? It would be the most stressful position to ever have, unless you're a person who just was a control freak and wanted to control everything because you're that type of a sociopath. Yeah, that's the thing, folks. You know, billionaires and millionaires who want to be politicians are simply not suitable for the job, because no millionaire or billionaire would want a job like a politician, not if he was a person of integrity. No way. And you might say, oh, no, he might be someone who wants to get in there and change the world and make it into somewhere better. No, folks, because the whole system is corrupt. You can't change the system by getting within the system and attempting to maneuver within it. Because once you enter into that system, you're working in a system which is completely and utterly corrupt from the ground up, right from its very core kernel. If you're willing to step into that arena, it's because you're a control freak, not because you want to make change. I mean, it's a scam, folks. These people shouldn't be in positions of power. How are millionaires and billionaires ever going to do anything to help the little guy? I mean, why would you think they even care about the little guy and they would ever do anything to help society? Because, of course, they wouldn't, because they're millionaires and that's how they got their money, by exploiting everybody else. They just love to get these positions where they're in power like this, because then they're open to exploit the entire world and they can collude with all the other politicians to make sure the scam continues. That's what it's all about, folks. Government is racketeering, pure and simple. There is no other reason for it. It's a bunch of parasites stealing from the rest of the world and paying themselves exorbitant amounts of wages while they're doing it. That's what politics is. It isn't there to help people. It isn't there to create a beneficial system for society or mankind. It's there to manage people into compliance with the ruling parasites so they can keep stealing and keep setting people up for these depopulation programs. I mean, that's what they do, folks, but unfortunately most of the world has Stockholm syndrome and actually sees these people as something wonderful that they should aspire to be like and that they should admire and they should fawn towards and be excited to meet them and all sorts of stuff like that. They're a bunch of parasites, folks. A bunch of parasites, thieves, warmongers and criminals disguised as a political system. And the main goal of that system is to keep people distracted so they never notice what's actually going on around them. Keep them tied up worrying about theatres of conflict and political rhetoric and all this stuff that they think means something when it doesn't. But they're all parasites, folks, and they're all groomed for the positions that they hold. And it doesn't really matter what country you look at, it's the same in every country. It's certainly that way here in Australia and in New Zealand. You can even look at the history of prime ministers in Australia and New Zealand, you'll find that they're all sent overseas, they're all educated overseas, they're all taught globalist policies, and they all come back here and they're put in the next line to be the next little puppet to all support the same global agendas and same global policies. And really, what are these global policies? Is it really about making a one-world government, or is it simply about implementing the same agendas in each country? And what are these agendas? Because really, when you step back and look at it, what has happened to our society over the last couple of generations? I mean, since I was a kid, what has happened in our society is a dramatic loss in life skills to the people. People have become more and more dependent upon automation, more and more dependent upon canned food, upon recipes being prepared for them, upon gardens being prepared for them, upon everything being done for them. Very, very few people know how to actually survive in the real world. Very few people know how to plant a seed, plant a garden. People don't know how to hunt, they don't know how to trap, they don't know how to fish. A lot of people don't even know how to set up a tent, how to create shelter for themselves if they would be trapped in the forest. You might think, well, why would people need such skills? We have all these cities now, we have everything automated, we have GPSs, we have mobile phones. We don't need all of that old stuff. It's all so passé. We're beyond that now. But are we really beyond that, or has this been done by design? Because when you get a population that is bereft of life skills, if that population suffers any type of disaster or cataclysm or world-changing event, then how do the people survive? How do they get through? Who do they look to for leadership if they're not able to lead themselves? Especially if the leaders aren't able to lead either. I mean, they might be able to lead on paper. They might be able to lead if they're a politician. But how do they lead an expedition or a hunting party or a party to construct shelter or forage for food or any of the stuff they may need to do should there be some type of cataclysm or some type of disaster? Should there be some type of world-changing event such as a extended ice age due to a grand solar minimum? How do the people survive such an event if suddenly the power goes out and they don't have their GPSs, they don't have their cell phones, they don't have any access to their houses or anything like that because it's all digital locks and the power's off? How do people make it through this type of a situation? Because the real problem is that should such a situation arise, the people will instantly expect the government to be there to save them. You know, if there was an ice age, they go, well, the government will be here soon with snowplows to fix everything up and deliver all the hot food and hot water and everything we need to us. But why would they expect that? Because the government isn't this all-powerful thing. The government is simply a bunch of people, the same as them. And what if that's not what the role of government is? Not really. What if government was simply there to distract you and keep you contained and keep you under control? And you just thought the government was there to protect you. But what if the government isn't there to do that? What if the government has already hightailed it out and is quite secure in the many underground bases that are all over the place, all over the earth? We've got lots and lots of deep underground bases, folks. Where do you think these came from? Who do you think built these? Do you think these were actually built by our civilization, by our society? Do you really think that in the 200 years since Australia was formed, we had the opportunity to go and build all these bases? Do you really think that they had the opportunity since the Industrial Revolution 200 years ago to go and build all of these huge underground bases in the United States and everywhere else around the world? Do you really think these seed vaults are there simply because it's a novel way to store seeds? I mean, do you really think there is not more going on here than what people are being told? And even with what people are researching and even where people are being led with their research, even the, some of the stuff that we're looking at that we're fearing coming down the pike, you know, the whole smart grid, sure, this is a reality, but the concept of mankind being led into AI and all this sort of stuff, sure, it's a reality. It looks like that's where they're going, but how is that going to work with a grand solar minimum? How is that going to work through a coming ice age? And how much of it is simply a distraction keeping us from looking at what is going on behind the scenes? How much of it is keeping us worried about what this system is doing rather than realizing that the system is fiction, the system is non-existent, and the system is as fragile as everything else, as fragile as life? And soon the system is not going to matter at all, because in an environment such as a frozen ice age environment, I mean, who cares about the system? It's not going to be about any type of smart grid. It's going to be about what you can do and what knowledge you have to make it through a very, very harsh environment as a fragile human being. I mean, as I've said before, when I look at this system and I look at the smart grid and everything that's rolling out, it seems more like an exercise to gather and correlate the data to find out what the state of consciousness is at the end of this cycle. And they're doing this because the cycle is about to end because of this grand solar minimum. And like I said, the problem with it is that if it does happen, most people are just going to simply sit there and wait for the government to come and save them. People simply aren't prepared to save themselves, and even if they were prepared to save themselves, many people simply don't possess the life skills necessary for them to do so. Like I said, many people can't even forage for food or build shelters anymore. Many people don't know how to hunt or know how to fish because they've been all led into this vegan society and this vegan culture. And folks, veganism, I mean, eating healthy vegan food may be great for you, may be really good for you. But what happens if there's a grand solar minimum and nothing will grow, and the only food that is available for you is to go hunting? How many vegans do you think will survive that? Most vegans in such a situation would also be very, very down on body fat, so they would simply not survive a very long time in an ice age anyway. This is why I've always thought that, you know, paleo is far, far better. You don't want to be eliminating all meat from your diet, because in a situation where you may need that meat to survive, you don't want to have any type of toxic reaction to that meat. I mean, I eat all sorts of food, folks. I mean, very often when I'm in Peru, I'm on a vegan diet for months on end because that's simply the diet that is served at the retreat. But very often on other occasions, when I'm in the jungle, when I'm meeting people from strange tribal cultures, when I'm meeting Indians, when I'm meeting Shipibo, when I'm meeting all sorts of different people, they're offering me some very, very bizarre foods. And it's kind of impolite to refuse food when it's offered to you by people, and so you kind of develop a palate for just about anything. And so that's what I've done. I mean, I eat as healthy as I can, but I wouldn't consider myself to be a vegan or a carnivore or anything. I simply consider myself to be an intuitive opportunivore. I'll eat whatever's available, and I'll eat the best of what is available and as healthy as possible, but I'm not going to limit my options and thereby limit my chances of survival. And when you look at situations on the earth, you look at people on the earth such as the Inuits who live in Alaska and in the frozen regions of northern Russia, you find that these people have a meat-only diet because it's the only thing that's available to them because of the ice that they're surrounded by. These are just interesting things to think about, folks. And when you look at how veganism has been promoted right around the world, and we've got all sorts of people going towards completely plant-based diets, when you factor in the coming grand solar minimum that's going to be unfolding within the next 5 to 15 years, it really is quite a sobering reality to have to face, and it really does appear that this has been done deliberately, and it's been done in such a way that many of the people who have adopted the vegan lifestyle simply are not going to be able to survive in a frozen environment. They're simply not going to have the skills necessary to do so, nor are they going to have the metabolism necessary to be able to consume whatever they need to consume in order to survive. And again, folks, I'm not speaking out against veganism or anything like that. I'm simply looking at what is coming and being realistic about it. Because no matter how much you try to ignore this, I mean, it's there and it's coming, and there's not anything anybody can really do about it. It's sunspot activity. You can't really control that, folks. It isn't part of any grand conspiracy. It isn't part of any type of depopulation agenda or war that the government is implementing themselves. It's simply part of a natural cycle. And it's coming, and the facts are in, and there's really no way to deny it, and there's no point even saying if this comes, because there's no if about it. It's coming. That's the way it is. And as I was mentioning last week on the radio show last week, the weather that we've seen in northern Washington this early in the year, the incredible chill that came across in late September, this is very, very abnormal, folks. We're going to probably see this come earlier next year and probably earlier the year after that. And who knows how harsh the winter will be this year and how harsh the winters or how long the winters will be and how long they will continue to be. But I think when it does come, it's simply going to come, and it's going to come very, very quickly. I don't think it's going to be a gradual thing. We may see over a period of a couple of years where it gets cooler at times when it isn't supposed to be getting cooler, such as we've just seen. We may see that for the next couple of years, but I honestly think that when the grand solar minimum hits, it's going to simply be a wave that goes out and going to wake up one day and most of the world is going to be frozen. That's simply the way I think it's going to happen. I think that's probably the way it happens every time. And that would also account for things such as what we're calling the mud flood. That could also be the result of something like a grand solar minimum. If there was a massive ice buildup, therefore there would be a massive water buildup. There would be a massive thaw when the ice thawed. Anyway, there would be a massive inundation across certain landscapes with vast amounts of water as the thaw happened. And this may result in something such as what we're calling the mud flood. It may possibly be responsible for some of the evidence that we've seen to support this hypothesis around the world anyway. Very interesting times, folks. Very, very interesting times. And I know this is all kind of uncomfortable to look at, but like I said, I think it's something that needs to be faced because it's a reality and it's coming. And when I look at how much people are distracted, nobody's talking about this. And all of the stuff with society, all of the things, the goals that we have, the little chores that we do, we're sort of running on the treadmill thinking we're actually getting somewhere, and we're not. You know, so many people waste their lives with these incredibly inane activities which don't lead anywhere. They might think they lead somewhere, but all it really ultimately does is give them a bigger pile of stuff to sit on, or give them more social status, or more of this, or more of that. none of which actually means anything in regard to being a human being, none of which means anything in regard to what it means to be a living life form, you know, a human living on this earth, and what our relationship to this earth is. And, you know, the relationship to the earth, people may choose to ignore this and think, oh, this is pantheism, this is New Ageism, you're saying the earth is alive, the earth is this, the earth is that. No, I'm not saying any of that stuff. I'm simply saying that this is our home. The environment of the earth is the home that we have. And we do have a symbiotic relationship with this home. And it's important for us to notice what's going on with our home. You know, a bit of house cleaning, folks. So we do this in our little homes, in our little houses. You know, we'll notice if there's spider webs building in the corner, or if there's gophers digging in the backyard, or there's birds' nests in the gutters, and we clean these things up. We notice if the carpet's dirty or the wall is stained, and we clean things. But when we look at our bigger home, i.e. the earth, we don't really notice these things. When we do, we think it's simply some sort of corporate degradation, some sort of environmental destruction, some sort of oil spill, or something that we're doing to mess things up. You know, the whole concept of man-made climate change and all this sort of stuff, we're not really looking at it from a broader perspective. We're not really looking at it as our home and noticing the subtle changes in our home. You know, if the roof starts to leak, you notice that you've got a leaky roof and you start to fix it. If the wall starts to crack, you notice these things are happening, you take steps to fix it. But we don't view our earth in that same way. We don't view it as a home. We don't notice the subtle changes in the environment that are happening that are not due to mankind doing things. They're not due to mankind throwing plastic bags and using too much garbage and using fossil-based fuels and driving around in big SUVs. None of these changes that we're seeing are man-made, folks. I think they give us all these things and they create all this pollution and all this stuff so they can promote the concept that it is man-made. But again, it's all just part of the theatre, part of the distraction, all part of the plan to prevent us from ever really noticing what is actually going on with our home. And I think it's important, folks. I really think, even with the truth movement, this conspiracy culture and everything we're doing here, I think with all of it, it's very important that people step back from the whole thing and just see how much of it is distraction, how much of it is theatre, and how much of it is us simply being led where the powers that believe they be want us to be led. They want us arguing about all these little things and talking about all these little conspiracies and all this stuff so we don't notice what's going on around us. Because when the grand solar minimum hits, it's just going to hit. No one's going to be expecting it, no one's going to be prepared for it, and it's going to change things dramatically. And at that point, all this arguing and bickering and theories about what's going on all become instantly irrelevant. And what becomes irrelevant is survival. And that's something to think about. It's a very, very sobering reality, folks, but it is something to think about. But I think we have reached break time here, so I'll leave it there for now, and we're going to have a break. Thank you for joining me on the show today. It's always a pleasure to have your company, and I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Don't go away, because there's plenty more to come. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I also seem to be hearing a little bit of earth hum coming through the microphone at some stages, folks, so I do apologize about that. There's not really much I can do about it. As I said, I'm on the road in a motel near the airport, and it is what it is. It's kind of a weird intermittent hum that seems to come and go, so it could be something to do with the power in the motel or something, some appliance somebody's using or whatever. And I do apologize about that, but there's very little that I can do to rectify the problem. But folks, looking at these grand solar minimums and the possibility of very sudden ice ages, well, the possibility of, if there is an ice age, the concept that it hits very, very suddenly. Remember the mammoths that they found? I think they were in northern Russia, and they've probably been found in other areas of the world as well. But there were mammoths that were found frozen, and they still had fresh daisies in their mouth. Like, the freezing of these mammoths had happened very, very suddenly, because they were eating food as the frost hit them, and they simply froze with the food still in their mouths. And some of these mammoths that were thawed out from the ice still bled when they were cut, and the meat was still good. People were still living off these mammoths. They were digging up frozen elephants, and they were eating the flesh for many years. And this would also indicate that this flesh could not have been really that old. I mean, they could have been thawed and eaten if they'd been frozen in the ice for thousands of years. They were possibly only frozen for hundreds of years. So that's another interesting concept. And there's all sorts of evidence of this all over the world, of very, very rapid freezing that has happened in certain places on Earth. So what's to say this is not simply from solar minimums happening? I mean, you look at the charts of solar minimums, which I've shown you on previous shows. And again, I apologize because it's very unlikely I'm going to have time to be able to include any charts in the show. I'm actually rushing to try to get this show recorded before I have an appointment this afternoon. And once the appointments start, then it's just going to be a roller coaster ride until I leave here on Sunday. So I do apologize for the lack of slideshows to go with this place. When you look at these solar minimums, if you look at these charts, you could just go onto Google Images or anywhere and just type in solar minimum timeline or something like that, and you'll see that these happen on regular cycles. So you have a small solar minimum every 200 years and you have a larger one every 400 years, well, thereabouts. There seem to be quite large ones every 400 years, and this is the point that we're heading up to now. We had one about 200 years ago, which was reasonably slight, but it was still a mini ice age, and we had another one 200 years prior to that, which was far more severe, and that's the type of solar minimum we're heading into now. It's what's called a grand solar minimum as opposed to just a regular solar minimum. And the point is that there's all sorts of evidence to support these minimums and these freezes happening very rapidly across large sections of the Earth. So the question is, why are the government and the environmental agencies not talking about this? I mean, sure, the government isn't talking about it because the government is probably colluding. Well, not all of it, but I mean, the members at the top of these government organizations are probably quite aware of this and are all colluding together, but most of the politicians are probably unaware of it because most politicians are generally stupid folks. I mean, they are. I mean, honestly, you wouldn't enter that arena if you were possessing too much of your mental faculties. I mean, unless you're just corrupt to begin with and you're part of the crime gang and you're going in there to make profits. I mean, otherwise you'd just, you know, you wouldn't be joining the system anyway. And that's the thing as well, you know, we blame a lot of criminal activity on a lot of low-level politicians, and we kind of lump all politicians into the one basket and say they're all criminals, they're all sociopaths, they're all part of the same club. And the ones at the top are, but most of them are just generally stupid folks. That's the problem. Most of them are too stupid to be a serious criminal. They just like the kickbacks they get from the job. So you can't blame all of them, but the point is you can look at the science behind the solar minimums. You can look at the fact that this is very, very real. It's a regular cycle, and it's completely undeniable. There's no saying it's not coming. There's no saying it's a conspiracy theory. There's no saying it's because we use too many plastic bags or drive around in big SUVs. It's nothing to do with any of that. So that's the question, you know. The question is, why are nobody talking about it? The scientists are talking about it. A lot of people in environmental agencies are saying, hey, by the way, folks, there's this terrible thing that's about to happen. But the powers that believe they be simply are not alerting the people. The media isn't alerting the people. Perhaps they're trying to avoid mass panic or something. I mean, you get to that point where you start thinking that. Well, perhaps they're doing it because they want to avoid mass panic. They are trying to figure out a way to save us without really letting us know we're in danger, because everyone will freak out and they want the government to save them, and the government can't save everybody, blah, blah, blah. You can justify it any way you like in your mind. But when you step back and look at it on the larger scale, you start taking everything into account. You start taking the fact that they're actually promoting the concept that global warming is coming and taking all steps that they can to cool the place down, you got to ask why. Well, if they know this solar minimum's coming, why are they helping it along by wanting to cool things down? You look at the way they've promoted the loss of life skills, the way they've promoted this automation and this digital society. You look at what it's all about, how it is correlating all the data on people. And again, you look at the concept of promoting veganism at the end of this cycle here, right before we're at a point where there's not going to be any plant-based diets available for anybody, because there's not going to be too many plants that are going to be able to grow in a frozen wasteland. So, you know, you look at the whole thing, and again, even saying that, folks, I'm not saying anything about veganism. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it at all. I'm not saying it's unhealthy or anything like that. I'm simply looking at mankind in relationship to the home that we live on, i.e. the Earth, and what is necessary for survival to continue for this species on this earth and in this home. You know, when I look at all of this, I see we're being set up. You know, we've all been corralled into cities where we're all dependent upon department stores, we're all dependent upon trucks arriving to bring food to us. You know, there are very, very few people on earth who can simply pick up a tote bag and walk into the wilderness and survive on their own. There are very, very few people who actually have those skills. And these skills used to be the most important thing in life. These used to be absolutely mandatory for anybody. Even when I was a kid, you know, I couldn't wait to go and learn how to build a tent, how to go and learn to build a shelter, how to go and learn all of these great things about survival in the outdoors. I wanted to be Davy Crockett or whatever, you know, the things you want to do when you're a kid. You want to be able to go and be a caveman and live in that way. But now kids don't think that way. Kids now, they want to have the latest iPhone. They want to have the latest game. They want to have the latest little trinket. They don't really want to know about anything to do with catching their food or hunting or camping or building a shelter for themselves or survival. They don't really want to know about any of that sort of stuff. And it's the same with society in general. And you look at it, folks, and you look at the regularity of these solar minimums, and you have to step back and look at it and ask the questions, you know, is this all being done deliberately? And I think it is. And again, you know, when I look at the concept of the scrying mirrors, the concept of what to look out for at the end of the cycle, it all begins to make sense to me, folks. I think this happens again and again. And mankind is simply led further and further into stupidity with each cycle, further and further into a completely superficial world where they become willing participants in stuff which condemns their own soul. You know, because the more and more this corruption gets revealed to people, and the more people continue to participate in the corruption, continue to pay their taxes, continue to pander to the system, knowing full well that it's corrupt, well, then they become willing participants in the criminal activity of the governments, and they condemn their own soul. So, you know, I look at all of this stuff, folks, and I think it's all been done by design. You know, when I look at this place that we live in, this realm, whatever this earth is, as I've said to you before, I wouldn't be surprised if we're involved in some type of soul test, some type of a harvesting of human consciousness, harvesting of human energy, and harvesting of human souls. You know, getting people to do the wrong thing, knowing full well that they're doing the wrong thing, but having them do it anyway, simply out of fear for themselves. Fear of the one thing in life that is inevitable, and that is death. By keeping people in fear of death, you're able to control them through life. And that's a very, very subtle part about what this system does. It's a very, very subtle control mechanism which has been interjected over human consciousness. It's a way of keeping people in line without them even really knowing that you're doing it. Yeah, because most people live their entire life in fear of death. And death is truly the only part of life which is inevitable. And like I said, you know, death is what you came here to do. And what if it's about how you die? What if it's about the moral compass that you adhere to through the path? What if it's about how much you're actually prepared to take? What if evil exists simply because it gives you the choice as to whether to comply with that evil or not, and thereby whether to become a willing participant in the continuation of that evil simply by your compliance to wrong behavior due to your fear of death, your fear of reprisal, your fear of what will happen to you if you should actually do the right thing. You know, what if that's what this is about, folks? You know, and the more and more that I look at this, the more and more it would not surprise me at all if that's what's going on. And I know these are really sort of esoteric things to think about. Some of this might be very confrontational for people to think about, you know, this type of reality. You know, the concept of the world is so vastly different to what we've been told, and the concept of reoccurring cataclysms, the concept of recycling of human consciousness, the gradual dumbing down of human consciousness, and even the concept of all of these rabbit holes being put there simply to distract us and to help in what is known as the externalization of the hierarchy. As I've mentioned before, you expose the system, you expose the workings of the mechanism, the revelation of the method, so that people become willing participants in the corruption which is condemning themselves and the rest of the world to wherever it is that we go after this experience. You know, I know it's very confronting to look at all of this sort of stuff, folks, but I think it's something that needs to be discussed. I mean, all possibilities need to be put on the table, all options need to be considered. There is no right or wrong in any of the stuff we're looking at. I mean, sure, there are wrong things. It's wrong to hurt people. It's wrong to inflict yourself and others. It's wrong to do any type of willful damage. We know what is right and we know what is wrong. But in looking at the theories that we have, in looking at the rabbit holes we go down, there is no right or wrong in any of this discussion. All there is an attempt at reaching some level of understanding of the human condition and some level of understanding of the environment and the world in which we live in and what it really means to be human and what we are facing in this world, you know? I mean, if this is real, if these recycling cataclysms happen, if these reoccurring situations do happen, if there are civilizations beneath civilizations and new ones built on top all the time, and there are people taken to underground bases and the earth is repopulated after each of these cycles, if all of this stuff is going on, the question is why? If it isn't some sort of a soul harvest, then what is it for? What is the purpose of all this? I mean, if this was simply the world that we live in and it was subject to recycling cataclysms, recurring cataclysms, wouldn't it simply be beneficial to create a reality or a society that can adapt to these cataclysms and live according to them happening all the time and just find a way through it all? Why is all of this stuff so hidden? Why are we kept running on the treadmill? Why are we kept in a situation where we have to pay to be alive? Why is all of this stuff done to us to keep us so distracted from what it means to be human? There's got to be a higher purpose to it all. And that's really what becomes the most interesting part about it, folks. Now, that's what really starts to reaffirm a lot of this in your mind when you start looking at it as well, you know, because we all go through life and we think, well, and there's got to be something more to all this. Why? Why is everything the way it is? Why am I here? What's it all about? You know, when you start factoring in the fact that our history is wrong and the fact that these reoccurring cycles do happen, the fact that it's all tied together with the sun, the solar minimums, all of this sort of stuff, and how so much of this society is built to distract us. You know, why all the wars are there? Why all of this social rhetoric exists? Why we're forced to measure ourselves according to other people's standards? Why the education system is the way it is? Why any of this stuff is here, folks? You start looking at all this and factoring all this in as a possibility, and everything actually begins to make a little bit of sense. So really, when you look at that, it comes back to you, the individual. You know, what your moral compass is and what your emotional state is through all this. You know, how much of this are you prepared to really look at? How much of this are you prepared to consider? How much of what you do in your life is about finding your own path through it and finding out what it means to be you, what you really are and who you really are? And how much of it is about distraction? How much of it is about running around between the lines, trying to keep your head above water, simply so that you don't notice what's going on? And how many of the things you are actually doing in your life are actually important? How many of them are important to being a good human being, to raising your children in the right way, to being a good parent, a good brother, a good sister, a good friend? You know, you might think, well, everything I'm doing is regarding that because I'm working to earn a good living and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, take out the fact that you have to pay to be alive. Remove that factor. If you didn't have to pay to be alive, how many things are you doing which are beneficial to actually some sort of a valid contribution of the human experience? How much of them are beneficial and how much of them are really about finding yourself and being the best of all you can be in a real human environment? You find not much of it is, folks. Most of it is all revolved around the economic system. And the economic system is not anything that supports humankind. The economic system is a system which is designed to enslave mankind and to turn most of the world into a rubbish tip in order to keep the economic model going. So that's not any way to judge what it means to be a good person. And the question is, you know, how much of your life is about finding what it means to be human and about understanding this realm that we live in? And how much of it is put there to simply keep you looking in the other direction? These are very sobering questions for people to ask, and I think they're very life-changing questions for people to ask. I think if enough people could be encouraged to ask these questions, perhaps we would create a better future. And yeah, and whatever the future holds, whatever the human experience is, I really don't think it needs to be like this. I really think we could do far better if we could simply wake up to ourselves. You know, the loss of self that I keep coming back to, folks. That's really what it's all about, isn't it? I do apologize for the noise that you're probably hearing on the show as well, folks. I just interject and say that at the moment. Maybe you can't hear things the way I can, but there's certainly a lot of weird road noise going on outside. Perhaps they're working on the roads or something. So I just hope that's not coming through the microphone too much. But if you're hearing some sort of a weird hum, it's some sort of earth-moving equipment I think they've got outside. Yeah, but I know a lot of this, like I said, is quite confronting. It's a really kind of a different way of thinking about things for people. And I'm certainly not saying, no, we don't need to pay attention to 5G. We don't need to pay attention to the smart grid. We don't need to pay attention to all the rabbit holes. We don't need to pay attention to all this stuff. I'm not saying any of this. I'm not saying that our fate is inevitable. I'm not offering any type of defeatism at all. I'm simply asking people to consider what it really means to be human and what their relationship to this earth is, what their relationship to the world really is. Now, think about their relationship to society, and it's as a slave. I mean, all you're doing within this society is being forced to pay to be alive, walk between the lines, go and shop at certain places, buy certain things, fill out certain forms, you know, request approval for anything you really want to do. You can't actually go and be yourself. Now, how often do you get a chance to just go and sit on the mountain or just go and sit at the beach for the day or whatever? You know, I still remember the man that I met sitting at the beach at Ventura, just sitting there crying, just sitting on the beach, an old man, and I asked him why he was so upset. And he said it was because he realized he could have done this 50 years ago, just gone and sat on the beach because that's all he ever really wanted to do. And he wasted all of his life doing all this stuff that he thought was important when it wasn't, because none of it led him to discover himself. And himself was really all he ever really wanted to know. Ultimately, that's all we ever really want to know. That's all of us want to know, folks. As I've said to you before, when my travels, the people that I've met around the world, I've met so many lonely people. People who are beautiful, they're confident, they've got everything going for them. When you really get them alone and talk to them, you find that inside they're sad and lonely people. And I find that most people are sad and lonely people that are searching for the meaning of themselves in all of the trappings of society, all the stuff they can gather, you know, what it means to be successful or any of this stuff that these social parameters that have been given to them and measure themselves up to. This is the stuff that they use to actually judge the quality of their own lives. And they go through life with these ideas in their head, and it, no matter how much they gather, how many items they gather, how much wealth they gather, how many relationships they have, how many children they have, all of this stuff, none of it really fulfills them because they're all searching for the wrong thing. You know, what they're really looking for is themselves, and they're looking for it everywhere else other than inside themselves. And even when they get to that point and they get what they would class as being successful within the parameters of this society, they get to that pile of stuff and they sit on it and they think, well, what was it all for? Because there's nothing here. You know, it's not really anything that means anything, and they haven't developed any relationship with this earth and with life itself along the way. Now, so many people get to the end of things wondering what it was all for. Yeah, you know, my father did. He was just sitting there wondering what it was all for. He said, there's no meaning to life at all. It's just this complete mess, and there's not really any reason to be here. But again, my father was probably one of the more superficial persons you would ever meet. But, you know, a lot of people go through life that way, and they just think there's nothing to it. There's no real reason to do anything. There's no real reason for anything, because they've never been able to find anything. They've never been able to find themselves. They've never been able to find enlightenment, whatever that may be to them. They've gone through life and they've collected all the stuff they were told to collect, and they've got the house and they've got the 2.4 kids and done everything they were told that they had to do to be a functional human being within society, but it didn't mean anything, is the thing. So you've got to wonder, well, what was this society constructed for? Why? Why do we do any of this? If none of it leads to ourselves and none of it leads to any improvement for the human condition, then why do we do it? Why do we continue to participate in it? And again, you know, it usually comes down to fear. It comes down to the point that we've been programmed to respect authority and to always do what we're told. But again, you can even get beyond that and ask, well, why? You know, if we're subject to these reoccurring cataclysms and these recycled civilizations, then why are we working and doing any of the stuff that we're doing? Why aren't we working to create a society which would be able to live in some sort of harmony and awareness of these cataclysmic cycles? And again, that's where you start getting to the point of questioning whether this is some sort of a soul harvest. Because you look at the externalization of the hierarchy, you look at the amount of corruption, you look at the legends of the scrying mirrors and all of the stuff that we're told and all the witchcraft and all the little kinky things that we're told about, and you really have to wonder if that's what's going on here. You know, why do they build the population up so much if the population is simply going to be destroyed? Why do we even have situations such as the baby boomers where you're told you must produce as many children as possible because we need them for society? What for, when they know these societies are inevitably going to crumble, because they do every time there's a solar minimum? It really is an interesting situation, folks, and these really are interesting questions to ask. And it really does become apparent that there is far, far more going on here than most people are prepared to consider. And in the face of all this, folks, it doesn't matter about so many things that we think are important. It doesn't matter about so many of the social parameters we're given that we think we should adhere to. It certainly doesn't matter what shape this realm is. There's so many things that we think are important which simply aren't. What is important is understanding ourselves and understanding what's going on here. And I guess the first point towards that is understanding that those who are running this place certainly do not have our best interests at heart, and have certainly not been giving us the right information for us to ever be able to understand this reality at all. That's a given. That's a given. And when you really do begin to understand the depths of the lie that we're facing, well, it becomes pretty apparent why it's necessary for people to put all these belief systems down. It doesn't matter what you believe is going on here, folks. The fact is that you don't know, because none of us do, because none of us have ever been privy to the real information. What we do know is that what we're told simply is not true. And again, that's a given. But well, ladies and gentlemen, we have now reached that time again where it's the end of the show. A bit of a scattered show today. I didn't really have a format. I didn't really know what I was going to be talking about when I started. I just started talking, and what came out is what came out. So probably a little bit convoluted, probably a little bit tangential, but that's just the way it is. But thank you for tuning in anyway, folks, and thank you for putting up with these random thought flows that I give you on the show sometimes. And also thank you for putting up with the LA traffic noise. But folks, as I've mentioned to you before, I'm actually going home. I'm finishing this tour. I'm going home day after tomorrow back to Australia, so I'll be back to normal shows. And next year, at this stage, I'm speaking at an Acapulco in Mexico in February, around about February 17th. And that's going to be a great event. It's great every year. And if you would like to get a ticket to that event, you will find a banner on my website, thecrowhouse.com. If you click that banner and purchase your an Acapulco ticket via that banner, you will get yourself a 10% discount on the ticket, and that's always a good thing. I'll very likely be doing AV11 in the UK as well. I haven't heard from Ian Crane yet, but I would say that's on the cards. I usually do the AV conferences, but I was just so tired of travel in early 2019 that I just couldn't manage it this year. But I'd be good to get back there next year, and I probably will. So I will look forward to seeing people at those two events. I'm going to attempt to organise some sort of a small talk in LA sometime in late February or early March or even April, I don't know, sometime next year while I'm in the United States. That's something to look out for as well. But I will keep you posted on that. I'm sorry I couldn't put one together in the next couple of weeks, but I just didn't get my timelines right there, and it just isn't possible this particular trip. But I'll get one together in LA soon. A lot of people have requested I do one in this area, so I'll try to get that together for early next year sometime. And thank you, as always, to all the people who send me so many kind emails, the people who send me so many kind gifts in the mail. And thank you to my Patreon supporters. I could not do any of this were it not for the support that people give me on Patreon. So thank you very much for that. But that is it for me, folks. We are now completely out of time. Again, I'm sorry I wasn't able to edit a video clip together for this radio show. It's simply due to travel. I just don't have the time to do it. I don't have the means to do it where I am either. But I'll get back to regular shows next week. But thank you for joining me on the air today, folks. It's always a pleasure to have your company. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.